The 87th State Assembly District is part of a Republican-dominated portion of western and west-central Wisconsin. Like the 87th, its complementary districts, the 85th and 86th, are represented by Republicans. Today, the three Assembly districts make up the 29th State Senate District, which is also represented by a Republican currently. Voters have elected GOP candidates to the 87th Assembly seat since 2002, as today's Democratic guest knows very well. She's run against both Republican candidates who served during that time. Today on the West Side, we'll talk with the same two candidates who were on the ballot in 2016. You could call it a rematch election. Will voters in the 87th reaffirm their commitment to Republican representation, or will they choose blue with a Democrat? We'll talk with the candidates, we'll get their platforms, learn why they feel they're qualified for the job, and as always, we'll take your calls. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. Thank you for tuning us in this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. With me in studio from the 87th Assembly District, we welcome first the incumbent Republican candidate, James Jimmy Boy Edming from Glenflora. He comes from a business and farming background and served several terms on the Russ County Board of Supervisors in the 1970s and 80s. He was first elected to the Assembly in 2014 and is finishing up his second term. Jimmy Boy Edming, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Rich, and thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure and our listeners' pleasure. Elizabeth Riley is the Democratic challenger from Hayward in this race, in this repeat election matchup. She comes from a nursing and teaching background. After winning this August's partisan primary, she's making her third try at claiming the 87th Assembly seat in the general election. She also ran for the seat in 2012 and 2016. Elizabeth Riley, welcome back to the West Side.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Rich.
It's good to have you here. Listeners, here's your chance to speak directly with the candidates from the 87th Assembly District that are hoping to represent you in Madison. What issues are most important to you? We've got phone lines open right now, three of them, in fact. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. If you're outside of the district, you can call in with your questions or comments as well, because while these candidates will, if elected, represent their district, they also speak for the state as a whole. 1-800-228-5615. Jimmy Boy, I'll start with you. You also ran many times for this seat prior to getting elected. So it's a big district. It's a lot of work to cover from north to south, east to west. Why do you want another chance to represent the 87th?
Well, thank you. That's a good question. And the reason that I want to come back is the fact that, first off, I believe in term limits. I don't think our founding fathers ever decided that someone should be in office for 50, 75 years. You should go there, get what you want to get done, and get out. And I still have a couple things that I want to complete. One of them that's just a very passionate to me is my Employment First bill to give people with disabilities a chance to go out and work in the workforce. I'm very passionate about that. That was my bill to begin with, and the governor signed that bill. But I've still got some things left to do on that. Number one is, how do we get these people with disabilities from home to work and from work back to home again? And I still have that to do.
Transportation, the big issue.
The transportation, I think, is a big issue. And there's some other issues, too, that we're running into as we're going along. You know, we're going to have to stick some trailer bills onto it to make it really work. But that's really one of my biggest passions that I have. I've got work that I want to see done yet with the DNR. I'm not done with Wi-Fi, wireless internet, for the constituents. If you live in the 87th, you'll know what I'm talking about. Cell phone coverage and whatnot, and we've got a lot of work to do on it. But there's a lot of issues that I want to continue, and when I get these done, I'm out of here. But and I said in the first election, I want one shot at it. If I like it, I'm going to run the second one. If I like the second one, I'm going to run the third one. And that's where we're at today. And how many more I'll go, I don't know. But I believe in term limits. When I get finished what I want to get done, I'm going to jump ship and go out and have fun with antique automobiles.
So term limits, but no specific number of years for you at this point.
No specific number of years. And they say you will know when that time comes. Because when I come into Madison on East Washington, or on 51, when you get past the airport on 51, you'll see the dome of the Capitol, and I'll just say, "Wow, I got an office in there." And when I get out on East Washington, you get a couple of glimpses at it, and as you get closer to it, you see more and more. And as you walk up to it, you just say to yourself, "Wow, how lucky I am to even think about having this seat." And when you lose that excitement, it's time to jump.
Thank you for that, Jimmy Boy. Elizabeth Riley, I would assume that both candidates in this race, yourself included, would have to have passion to continue seeking office, to the chance and the honor to represent your constituents within the 87th. So the same question to you. This is, you know, you've gone at this a few times, and the question is why? Why do you feel so compelled to do, you know, a lot of work in the campaign in such a big rural district, in order to try to win the chance to represent these folks?
Well, thanks again for asking, Rich. The reason I'm back at it again is because Wisconsin needs to be in a new direction. We have had Republican rule for quite a few years now, and all I see are funding cuts to schools, funding cuts to health care, and dismantling of the DNR to the point where it's unrecognizable. I am running on a platform of a good, solidly funded public school system, not just K-12, but our exceptional technical and UW system schools. I am running on a platform of clean air and clean water for everyone because, believe it or not, water is life. And I am running on availability and access to good health care for everyone. I think that Representative Edming is to be admired in his push to help people who have disabilities find meaningful employment. I think that's key to a happy life for everyone. But when we're not supporting our small businesses and finding ways to help entrepreneurs start new businesses in things like renewable energy, or our Republican governor decided not to expand Medicaid for those very people who were trying to help find jobs, those are our most vulnerable citizens, and those are the people who need our help.
If I could follow up, as far as the direction the state is heading in, economically, the state has come a long way since the recession that began in 2008, 2009 territory. Unemployment is very low right now. Employers, I'm not sure, but I would assume in the 87th, are having trouble finding skilled workers. So the economy seems to be doing very well. And also, as far as school funding, this last budget had a lot more money for students. And so what direction, what about the direction that the Republicans have gone in do you not like, aside from the DNR issues and the others?
Well, if I look at education, I know that Governor Walker is branding himself the education governor because he has expanded funding to $200 additional dollars per student. That's a drop in the bucket compared to what has been slashed from our K-12 program. It still doesn't bring us up to where we were in 2009. So that's a mistake to think that that is really this great, wonderful, generous thing that he's doing for our schools. What was the first part of the question that you asked?
Well, I was talking about the economy, and we're heading, lot of people would say, business owners seem to think we're heading in the ideal direction.
Yes, because when we don't have to pay our employees anything except $7.25 an hour, unemployment may be down, but there are a lot of people in this district who are working 2 and 3 jobs trying to make ends meet. And there are a lot of employers who can't afford to pay any more in that because we don't have any kinds of programs in place to help those people be successful in their business.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. We've got some callers trickling in right now. I wanted to jump right to an issue that just happened within, at the end of September, basically. over a four-day stretch at the end of last month, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents arrested 83 undocumented immigrants throughout Wisconsin. A press release from ICE said that more than half of those had criminal histories. 16 of them had no prior interactions with police. So immigrant rights advocates have been condemning the arrest. Groups seeking to reduce immigration are praising them, saying that the federal government is following existing federal law. Local law enforcement said that it was a little different, this raid or this operation, because they didn't get prior notice, which is a break with the past, according to them. So I wanted to get a take from both of you on this. And I'll start with Elizabeth Riley, and then I'll go to Jimmy Boy Edming. So what did you think of the ICE arrests?
I'm having a huge problem with ICE and with the way immigrants are treated in this country, number one. Concentration camps for families who try to cross legally at the border and get turned away and then come back is a huge problem for me. And the fact that we're putting so much money into housing these people for indeterminate periods of time is unconscionable, number one. Number two, if you look at the number of farms who depend on illegal help to make their harvests or milk their cows, we are actually doing those people a disservice, the farmers in our very state. There was a big article in, I can't remember the publication, so forgive me for that, but about the Devin Nunes family who moved their farm from Tulare, California to Iowa.
Sure.
And how they employ all kinds of people who are here illegally. I think we live in a country that's rich enough and prosperous enough to be able to support a lot more immigrants than the Trump administration would allow. I think that some of our actions by ICE are out of control, and I really see this as a bad thing for this country.
I know this issue is definitely a federal issue and well outside. I mean, it's affecting people within the district, but also state legislators only have so much say or control over this issue. So, but I want to make that clear before I follow up here. I want to go to Jimmy. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. I'm trying to clear my head here. Democrats at the national level, Elizabeth Riley, have some of them have said ban, abolish ICE. Would you go that far?
I honestly don't know how to answer that question. All I can do is see the actions of the people when I look at children being taken away from their parents and distributed across this country where we have a hard time finding to whom they belong, getting them back with families, parents who have signed affidavits that they would leave without their children. I just think there are so many holes in this program and that it's cruel in the extreme. Does that mean get rid of ICE? I don't think so. Does that mean rein it in? I do think so.
Jimmy Boy Edming, I wanted to ask you the same question. I mean, what's your take on these arrests? Because some of them happened, I think, within the district. There was a large group of employees at Abbeyland Foods in Abbotsford that stayed home. Immigrants' rights advocates in that area said they were afraid. They were afraid that they'd get arrested and deported. And so I wanted to get your take on this.
Well, first off, you have to make a difference between legal and illegal.
Right.
I don't care what nationality they are, what color they are, or whatever. If you can be a legal immigrant to come in to the 87th Assembly District, get a Social Security card, get a job, learn how to speak English, welcome to the 87th. But as far as saying that I'm going to allow, and like you said, this is more of a federal issue, but if you complain, and Congressman Duffy says this, or I heard him say this one time, if you want to complain about immigrants coming in, don't complain with your mouth full, because it is a fact that they are the driving wheel that does a lot of our farm work, and I thank them for that. But As far as there's two ways to come to America. There's a way that you can try to slide under the wire, climb over the wire, or whatever it is, and the right way. If you come in with the documentation, come through the proper door, it might take you a week to do it. Nobody rips your kids away from the parents, but you come through the other way. A lot of these, I guess they call them coyotes. They will just bring teenage kids in with them, and they have no documentation of where they're at. And you'll see this, you know, like I say, I'm not against anyone coming to America. My grandfather came from Uppsala, Sweden. I mean, bless him for coming here. That's why I'm here. But Grandpa came in through Ellis Island the proper way to come in. He didn't try being a stowaway on a ship so he could jump in the water as he got to Ellis Island. And I mean, as long as they come in legally, I welcome them.
Just to follow up with that, because of this issue, I've been talking with a lot of people who try to help people come in legally, and once they're here, try to get them naturalized if possible. And I was surprised to learn that the process of getting legal citizenship in the United States, or trying to go through that process to come here legally, takes more than weeks. I've heard it takes years, and it can cost thousands of dollars for people that are trying to flee maybe economically depressed areas. So with that in mind, does that change anything?
No, I'd like to drive 110 miles an hour, but I'm going to get a speeding ticket for it. And if I got enough money to pay the ticket, I can drive 110 miles an hour. But there has to be some rules and some regulations.
Here's a follow-up for both of you. If there was an option in Wisconsin for some sort of a worker's visa or something where it wouldn't be citizenship, it would only be temporary time here. I mean, Sean Duffy has tried this. Conservative federal lawmakers have tried this. Democratic lawmakers have tried this to create some sort of a temporary work visa. It doesn't get much traction because there's a lot of people that disagree over the details. So would you support something like that in theory, of course?
And I agree with Congressman Duffy on that. If you can, you know, it would be a fairly simple procedure to do. I'm Jose Rodriguez now, and I want to come up and work on one of the huge farms in Sawyer County. I tell the immigration office where I'm at. They can call this farm where I'm working on when my time number of days are up that I can't be here. I have to go back and come back through again the legal way, not sliding under the wire or pole vaulting over the top of it. And as long as it's done legal and we know who they are, I mean, let's just open up the prisons and let everybody out. I mean, hello, you know.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy Boy and Elizabeth Riley. If there were an option in Wisconsin, if the legislature were able to, or even would you advocate at the federal level for more of an option for temporary citizen or temporary status?
We already have that. I mean, we already have that. Go to Wisconsin Dells and look at the number of people from various countries in Europe who run the rides. Go anywhere. In the summer, go to Hayward. There are a couple stores right on Main Street that have foreign employees who live in the apartment above and work there all day long. We have that. Mm. So I don't see where the problem is. In fact, sometimes I think that's really questionable, depending on what it is you're having people doing. But if these big, huge farms in Sawyer County are employing people to work who are illegally here. First of all, if it's a huge farm in Sawyer County, I'm going to wonder if that's because it used to be several small family farms, but they lost their farms because they can't afford to keep them going anymore, which is a huge problem for dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin, as is the number of suicides of farmers. And that aside, we already have programs in place that we can hire foreign workers to come in here legally. I am talking about people who are trying to enter this country legally and get turned away at the border, or they are denied credible fear hearings, which is a very big deal. And if they are fleeing gang violence or other violence, And when you look at it, a lot of the violence in some of these Central American countries has been happening over time because of policies that have been put in place by the U.S. government. And that is a completely different issue. I'm not going to get into Honduras. I'm not going to get into Nicaragua or any other country down there, because that's not the purview of my seat that I'm seeking in the 87th Assembly District. But we need to look at our history and what we do.
You're listening to the 87th State Assembly District Candidate Debate on Wisconsin Public Radio. This district includes Rusk and Taylor counties, parts of Sawyer, Marathon, and Clark counties. Listeners in Athens, Chelsea, Hawkins, Jump River, and Weirgar. Excuse me. Thank you, candidates. To name a few, this is your district. I'm Rich Kramer. The two candidates in the November 6th general election are joining me in the studio today. They are Democrat Elizabeth Riley, she's from Hayward, and Republican incumbent Jimmy Boy Edming from Glenflora. We pick up our conversation when we return. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio, 88.3 and 88.7.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Earl M. Terry Endowment Fund, a permanent endowment that provides ongoing support to sustain the present and future operation of Wisconsin Public Radio. Support also comes from the annual Fresh Art Fall Tour, a self-guided road trip to 17 artist studios and galleries, October 5th through the 7th in the Lake Pepin and Chippewa River Valley area of Wisconsin. FreshArt.org.
Welcome back to the West Side. Today we're featuring the candidates from the 87th State Assembly District. That district includes Rusk and Taylor counties and parts of Sawyer, Marathon, and Clark counties. Voters in this district live in places like Bruce, Couderay, Ojibwa, and Rib Falls, to name a few of the communities within the 87th. I'm Rich Kramer. The two candidates competing in that election are Republican incumbent James Jimmy Boy Edming of Glenflora and Democratic challenger Elizabeth Riley of Hayward. What expectations do you have for your representatives? 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. How do you think they can best serve your interests in Madison? We're very curious to hear what you have to say. We've got two phone lines that are wide open right now, 1-800-228-5615. With that, let's take our first caller of the morning. We go to Tom in Rusk County. Tom, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Tom, are you there?
Yes.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay, I have a question for both Liz and Jimmy. Article 1, Section 18 of the Wisconsin Constitution says, "Nor shall any money be drawn from the Treasury for the benefit of religious societies or religious or theological seminaries." Today, there are large amounts of money, public money, being spent for private charter schools, which are mainly parochial and religious schools. My question is this: does this concern you? And if it doesn't, why not? And if it does concern you, what are you going to do about it? And that's the end of my question. What are you going to do about it if this does concern you? If it doesn't concern you, why doesn't it?
Good question, Tom. Thanks for that so much. 1-800-228-5615. Since Elizabeth Riley started the last round of questioning, I will start with Jimmy Boy Edming. I think that he's basically getting at the private school, the voucher system, and some of that money going to religious schools.
Well, if you look at Rusk County, if you take a look at OLS in Ladysmith, Our Lady of Sorrows, it's a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of my knowledge, there are more valedictorians and salutatorians that come out of OLS than any other school in Rusk County. And what by allowing what we have going, it allows parents the choice of where they want to send their students. And if you want to send your children to a parochial school and you think you can get a better education, I go into the schools. And I know that, like at OLS, when I go into that one, I mean, I am welcomed with open arms. They're getting a terrific education there, and they're getting good educations in the local schools too, and in the public schools. But by allowing this to happen, parents can have a choice of where they want to send their school, what district they want to send them to. And that's, you know, I'm not a lover of Common Core. I think it, they just go at this totally wrong. It may start out with a good intention, but it doesn't. And a lot of these little religious schools, I mean, you're not going to act up there. You're going to get a ruler across the knuckles if you goof up. And when they call home, you better not have it going again tomorrow, because you're going to get kicked out.
So to Tom's point, you don't think see it as any kind of a conflict that that public tax money is going towards a religious operation?
If you look at the number of students that are in these public schools or into these religious schools, you've got one in Holy Rosary in Medford.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a zillion kids, and as a rule they go through kindergarten up to fifth, sixth grade. Some of them go to junior high, but most of them, it's the elementary, really the age where you can really indoctrinate kids and make certain that they're going on the right track.
Thank you, Jimmy Boy.
It's the parents' decision.
Elizabeth Riley, it is the parents' decision, and the what do you say to Tom's question about, you know, the idea of this public-private kind of relationship with regard to religious schools?
I do not believe public money should support religious education, nor do I believe public money should be peeled off to support other schools that are not as accountable and that do not have to take other students, such as many charter schools. Those are considered public schools, but they still peel money off of genuine public schools. They have admission criteria that excludes a lot of people. They don't. Our Lady of Sorrows doesn't have to pay for special education. What they can do is take special education children and ship them to the public schools in Ladysmith. I know what it's like in Hayward. My husband is a public school English teacher. And the amount of funding that has been dropped from public schools in order to support things like religious education or charter schools that are not as accountable. And if you look nationwide at the research, those schools perform no better than public schools. If you look at the research, I'm a nurse. What I do is base everything I do on what the research says. I don't just go by how I feel about things. I learn what the facts are and go by that. This is a bad idea. I know when it started in the Thompson administration with vouchers, the whole idea was to give inner city children a chance to have a better education. Frankly, I thought it was wrong then, and I think it's wrong now. It needs to stop.
So I was just going to follow up with the original intent of this program was it was going to be limited to these urban areas. But the idea is that, you know, if you do have a school district that isn't performing as well as others, I mean, you've only got so many options with open enrollment. But as far as the choice, you know, don't you think parents should be able to have a choice?
They do have a choice. They can pay for their child to go to a parochial school. And I understand those things are expensive, but if that's what they want, they're going to have to figure out how to make that work in their budget. They already have a choice. And as far as this idea of failing schools, that's one of the things that really makes me irritated, because all of the people who are all about education reform are not educators. No one consults teachers for how things in classrooms should be run. No one consults anyone who is in the classroom every day with those students. And those are the people who are most important to hear from.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment for our candidates today. We're speaking with Republican incumbent James Jimmy Boy Edming and Democratic challenger Elizabeth Riley. They are both running for the 87th State Assembly District seat, which includes Rusk and Taylor counties, most of Sawyer County, and northwestern Marathon County, and a small part of northwestern Clark County. Jimmy Boy, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, if I could, please. I don't know how many other legislators go into schools and not just visit with the administration. And I go into the schools. I teach how a bill becomes a law right in the classroom. I teach how the kids can read a roadmap the old-fashioned way. I ask teachers. I don't think there's a school in the 87th Assembly District that I haven't been in at least a couple of times. And I know that I'm that I'm being there enough, because when I push the button on the door to get in, they never ask me who I am. Come on in, Representative Edming. So I know they know who I am. So as far as saying that, and I taught school for 5 years at Osteo Fairchild. So as far as saying that anyone in the legislature doesn't understand what's going on, I'm out there. I've got the pulse of the district.
Thank you for that. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got questions or comments for our candidates. I wanted to talk a little bit about local control. This is an issue that both parties are, you know, have said that they're big proponents of local control, that is, letting the cities, towns, villages, counties make up as many of the laws as they can in order to have more local representation. So individual communities around the state have passed referendums to address local public funding needs. For schools, we've seen it a lot. Some districts want a new building or repairs, or even to operate, they hold referendums. We're also seeing it being used in some counties, like way up north in Ashland. They're holding referendums in order to raise money to deal with the costs associated with the opioid issue or the methamphetamine issue. So is it reasonable to expect some assistance from the state, or should these communities look more to themselves to continue using referendums in order to come up with additional funding for various things? Elizabeth Riley, since Jimmy Boy started that last line of questioning, why don't you start?
I think that communities should be allowed to have referendums if they like. For various things, schools, whether it's to deal with opioid addiction. But I also think that the state needs to get out of putting limits on things like that. And the state is, the Republican administration has done nothing but that since 2010, including since 2014, when Representative Edming's tenure began in the legislature. Talk to anyone around Hayward about lakeshore development, and you will get an earful about the loss of local control. Talk to anyone in a school district about the loss of funding and about the loss of the ability to hold a referenda as they need in order to get better funding. Local control is a huge issue, and there have been over 100 bills taking away local control since Governor Walker and the Republican legislature took over in 2010.
Jimmy Boy Edming, same question to you. There have been attempts, even with school referendums, by certain different lawmakers to kind of restrict when they can be held, et cetera. So I wanted to get your take on the idea of the local communities going to referendums to raise money for a whole series of things, and the attempts made by some to try to rein that in. Do you think that they should be able to go carte blanche and use referendums for whatever they feel see fit?
I have the numbers in my notes here, and it's not fair to Elizabeth if I go through this packet and look at it. But if you look at the amount of money that the state of Wisconsin put into education in this last budget, it's higher than it was pre-Act 10. And look at what we have put in there.
There was some sparsity aid.
I was instrumental on that sparsity aid. You have a little school district like Winter. I mean, the closest neighbors they have is Park Falls and Hayward. They're caught in the middle, and I don't have the numbers in the top of my head what these are, but we did do stuff. And you just, you know, when you have a budget, when you run a business, and that's what I am, I'm a businessman. When you run a business, you cannot spend money that you don't have. And everyone has a pet peeve, and everybody's idea is more important than the neighbors and all of that. And you have to try to strike a happy medium to try to please as many people as you can. It's you know, I'd love to throw $250 billion at every school in the district, but it's not there, so I can't even do it.
If I could follow up, Jimmy Boy, there have been claims, mainly by Democrats, that this budget that includes the $200 per pupil statewide, mm-hmm, and the sparsity aid, they're claiming that is all about the November election, that it's so different from prior budgets from this governor that they're assuming that it has to do with the election. Do you buy those arguments?
No, because we're out. It's just like I said earlier. When I go into a school district, I'll ask the superintendent. I'll ask the teachers. I'll ask the principal these same questions. You know, what? How are you doing? You know, everybody wants more money, and mm-hmm. and it's common knowledge, and when you have $10 in your pocket and that's all you have, I'm sorry, you're not going to go out and have a T-bone steak tonight. You may stop at a McDonald's or whatever and do the best you can do, but you cannot spend money that you don't have. And the only way we can get more money is the only way I can have more money, Rich, for this budget is to take some from you and put it in the budget.
Thank you, Jimmy Boy. Elizabeth Riley, your thoughts with regard to you know, Jimmy Boy's comments and more money going in. They're putting more in there.
I think the mistake is when I hear Representative Edmonds say we have no money. They've been saying this since 2010. And if you look at the deficits created by the Republican administration over things like roads, especially, but with the paltry funding for education, it's abominable what's going on here. There is plenty of money in the state of Wisconsin. What's happening when Representative Edmonds says they're going to take it from you, Rich, it's not, you're not the person they should be taking it from. They should be raising taxes on the rich instead of giving them refund after refund. The month before the election in 2016, 11 individuals were given a tax refund of $27 million. And of those 11 people, not one of them had an income of less than $250,000 per year. To me, this state is awash in money. It's just all going to a few people. And what we need to do is tax the rich.
The counter to that, of course, is that those tax breaks are aimed at spurring the economy, and that taxing the rich would reverse the progress in the economy.
That is called trickle-down economics, and it hasn't worked. It didn't work when Reagan was president, and it's not working when Scott Walker is governor. It's not working under Donald Trump. This country has the biggest deficit right now since Donald Trump became president than it ever has. The state of Wisconsin has a deficit. Perhaps not the biggest deficit it's ever had, but tax breaks keep going to the wealthy. And what do? They don't hire more people. They buy back stock, which is what happened during the federal tax cut that the Republican legislature under Donald Trump passed. I'll tell you what, I have been disappointed and shocked at all the changes that have taken place in the state of Wisconsin since Governor Walker took over. When he ran for president, I thought, oh my gosh, no. I can't see this at the national level. Well, Trump got elected, and he has done what Scott Walker has done on steroids. We are not going to survive as a planet if we don't take care of ourselves and our people. Bottom line.
Voters in the 87th State Assembly District, along with all other 98 districts, are 36 days away from electing their next representative. The 87th District includes Ruskin-Taylor counties with parts of Sawyer, Marathon, and Clark counties. If you live in Gilman, Sheldon, Weyerhaeuser, Maplehurst, or Westboro, among others, you live in the 87th District. And I'm talking today with the people that are hoping to represent you in Madison. I'm joined today by Elizabeth Riley of Hayward. She's a Democrat seeking the 87th Assembly District seat, and Republican incumbent Jimmy Boy Edmonds of Glenflora, who is seeking another term. We'll be back in just a bit. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Sometimes heroes are right next door. On Central Time, we find Wisconsinites who are doing amazing things. From Paralympians to high school entrepreneurs, we talk with inspiring Wisconsinites and showcase their efforts. That's on Central Time, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, right here on the Ideas Network, or online anytime at WPR.org.
Support for WPR comes from Visit Sheboygan, presenting the Sheboygan Children's Book Festival, October 12th through the 14th. Authors, workshop writing, and art projects for all ages. How do you, Sheboygan? Visit Sheboygan.com. Support also comes from the annual Fresh Art Fall Tour, a self-guided road trip to 17 artist studios and galleries, October 5th through the 7th in the Lake Pepin and Chippewa River Valley area of Wisconsin. FreshArt.org.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been providing listeners with access to their legislative candidates for over 20 years. We hope that these on-air discussions give listeners and candidates the opportunity to connect over important issues. I'm Rich Kramer. Today on the West Side, we are talking with the candidates from the 87th State Assembly District. They face off November 6th in the general election. The winner will head to Madison to represent Rusk, Taylor counties, along with parts of Sawyer, Marathon, and Clark counties. Republican incumbent Jimmy Boy Edming and Democratic candidate Elizabeth Riley are joining me right now in the studio this morning. If you've got a question or a comment, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call to speak directly to the candidates. We're getting close to the top of the hour, but we'll take as many callers as time will allow. 1-800-228-5615. So one of within the 87th District lies the Lac-Courtier Reservation, the Lac-Courtier Tribe of Lake Superior, Chippewa, I believe. And we sent our summer intern, Molly Dove, up there to just basically get people's takes on the reservation, their concerns. And one of the things that came up was the whole idea of the relationship between the tribes and the states. So Molly Dove basically interviewed a handful of tribal elders and tribal board members. So here's Molly Dove's report.
The Lac-Courtier tribe near Hayward is one of six bands of Chippewa Indians who signed treaties with the United States in the 1800s. Over the next century, the federal government tried to relocate the tribe and westernize their culture and economy. Jason Schlunder is a member of LCO and sits on multiple boards within its government and school system. He says the impacts from these historical traumas are still present on the reservation.
When we think about those things and, you know, those issues and things that impact us, it's carried forward. So some of the direct impact is that our people lost their identity.
He says the tribe is in the middle of a revolution of healing.
It's not about being a victim and feeling sorry for yourself. It's about trying to pick ourselves up, and we do that together as a community.
But it's not just historical traumas affecting this tribe. Rosalie Goki is a tribal elder and council member of the Tribal Governing Board. She says there is a problem of children losing their identity within the tribe, and it may be because of the drug and alcohol problem right on the reservation.
This is what I know firsthand growing up in foster care myself, is being impacted by alcoholism that absolutely has impacted some of our culture. In some of our families.
She says when alcohol and drug use becomes prominent, children suffer and may even be taken from their homes and placed in the foster care system. Schlunder says reviving tribal culture in the reservation's children is the best way to beat this problem.
I personally benefited from that. I have seen many others as well. So in that, having a strong tie to culture and language also strengthens your identity as you, who you are. And that's, in that way, it's a preventative thing as far as our battle with addiction.
Both Schlunder and Goki believe if tribal children learn their language, it will give insight into their culture and who they are as a tribal member.
Language is our sovereignty. Culture, tradition, that is our sovereignty, and we need to hold on to that.
For the children of the tribe to regain a sense of identity, Goki and Schlunder says it's also important to go beyond the borders of their reservation. Goki says state politicians need to have more of an open ear to listen to their needs and learn about who they are to better represent them while crafting legislation.
To stop and check and see what our concerns are. And we really appreciate when those individuals do take the time out of their day, whether they're Republican or Democrat, to stop and say hi and ask about what our needs are.
But a bigger concern for Schlunder is the agreements the tribe has with the federal government. When the treaties were drafted over a century ago, the tribe ceded land to the federal government in exchange for the right to hunt, fish, and gather on that land they gave up. Schlunder says the United States has always benefited more from these treaties. He says the federal government uses natural resources on that land to build the country's economy while giving minimal compensation to the tribe.
And in the meantime, we've benefited too, but it's still not equal. You know, there's still more that needs to be, you know, kind of in our favor so that we can have an equal part of the contract as well.
One of the most recent examples of tension between tribal and non-tribal members in Wisconsin dates back to the 1980s. That's when a violent reaction broke out against LCO and other tribes for exercising their court-upheld treaty right to spearfish off the reservation in the northern third of the state. Many Wisconsinites protested, shouting racial slurs and threats against members of the tribe. Today, the tension is less visible, but Schlender says it has not disappeared. Even though the goal of the tribe is to better their relations with outsiders, he says tribal people have and will continue to make their own strides.
We have something to contribute to the world. You know, we're a very adaptable people, and so we've been able to continue to make strides in this country and contribute just as much as anybody else.
Tribal Elder Goki says elected officials should try to understand the trauma LCO members have faced. She says once everyone in the state uses the power of knowledge, relations can continue to improve. Molly Dove, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you for that report, Molly Dove. And I wanted to start, I'll go to Jimmy Boyan and I'll go to Elizabeth Riley as well. So it's a broad issue. I mean, the relationship between the tribes and the state hasn't always been perfect. Recent examples, the wolf hunt, there was some strain over that. The walleye wars, of course, was a painful part of the state's history. But improvements have been made. And so I wanted to ask you both, how will you or how have you worked with the Lac-Courtière in your representing of the district or you're in learning about the district? Jimmy Boy.
Thank you. And I'd like to begin with Buzunichi, which is hello, my friend, in the Lac-Courtière tongue. I'm a member of the Tribal Relations Board.
Okay.
So several times throughout a year, We get together in Madison with members of the different tribes throughout the state of Wisconsin, and I can truthfully say that I have some of my best friends are on the Lac-Courtière Indian Reservation. Tweed and Jason Weaver are I love the guys. I mean, they're out of this world. And one of the things that we're working on in this Tribal Relations Board is to try to maintain and keep their customs, their language, and so we don't lose this culture, and we have to teach this culture also in public schools, which we have not done yet, mm-hmm. but we're working on that, it's a long, slow process, and there's a lot of different ways to do it, but we are working through it, and I'm very proud to be on that committee, and I'm just, you know, we're gonna make things happen there.
Thank you, Jimmy Boy. Elizabeth Riley, what kind of contacts have you made with the tribe, and you know, how would your relationship with them kind of factor into your representation of the district if you were elected?
When I first moved to Hayward, the first job I had was as a home health and hospice nurse, and that brought me into contact with people throughout the Sawyer County, Ashland County, and into Price County areas. It was a terrific experience and a gift to be allowed to take part in both the beginning and the end of people's lives. It is a true gift. And it brought me onto the reservation and where I met a lot of people about whom I knew absolutely nothing. I'm 60 years old. When I grew up in school, we may have learned a little bit about Sacagawea, but that was it. Mm. So this, to me, was a completely new culture. Representative Edmund is absolutely right about the importance of language. And what we did to those people was to take away their ability to speak. We punished them for talking. And you still see this. You see this throughout the state and the country when people are silenced for whatever reason. And those are things that I want to bring justice to those people, number one. Number two, the LCO College has been very, very good to me. I taught there for a number of years. And it was a wonderful place to teach and a wonderful place for me to learn some hard lessons about myself. I owe the LCO community a great deal. Finally, I will say this. If this planet is to survive, which is very much in question, It will be because Indigenous people saved us. And it's time for us to start listening to our Native American communities when they tell us what we need to do to help save air and water.
Thank you for that, both of you. Jimmy Boy.
Yeah, and if I can add, part of this healing process that's going on, Tweed is on the Sawyer County Board of Supervisors, and he's the first Native American to ever be a county board, the chair of the county board. Hmm. I mean, the guy's a genius. I can't help but you got to love the guy.
He's a nurse.
He's a nurse.
Well, I mean, I don't care what he is. He's a super guy, and that's part of the healing that's going on, and we're making progress.
All right, we've got time for one more question. It's going to have to be brief. John and Tilden, if you can state your question as quickly as possible, we've only got a couple minutes, so go ahead. And we lost him. So with the last question, this is another federal issue. I just wanted to ask it because it is so, it's really seems to be dividing a lot of people. This has to do with Kavanaugh, but more broadly about the issue of, you know, sexual assault allegations, and this is part of the Me Too movement, but the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court nomination, the hearings have been very charged, and I just wanted to get very quickly your take on it from both of you. Jimmy Boyle, I'll start with you.
Well, first off, what they're doing there is absolutely wrong. First off, they've got an FBI investigation going on. The FBI does not make a decision. They are going to ask the same exact questions they asked the Senate.
Sure. And Elizabeth Riley, again, we've got like 30 seconds.
I think the whole thing is awful. I think it's terrible. I believe Dr. Ford. I believe that Judge Kavanaugh is horribly upset. I don't know of a woman, honestly, who hasn't been assaulted at some point in her life.
It is a very tough situation all around, and the whole nation is watching, so we'll keep informed on that. Thank you both. That's our time for the West Side today. I'd like to thank the candidates for the 87th Assembly District, including Democrat Elizabeth Riley and Republican incumbent Jimmy Boy Edming. Thank you both. As always, thanks to our callers and our listeners, and of course to Team Westside, especially Catherine Thomas, who produced today's program, Mort Cypress, who handled on-air production, WPR News intern Taylor Pomasol, and many more. We'll be back next Monday morning.